Who knew Japan had so many mummies? Cool story at coasttocoastam.com. Japan boasts a wide variety of strange mummified relics, like the purported mummies of river imps, flying demons, bordering on the fantastic, others like the remains of self-mummified monks, all too real, all too fascinating. Go take a look online at coasttocoastam.com. Great stories there. We'll get to some of that coming up in just a second. I'll get to our guest, too, next hour. Joseph P. Farrell is back. He's the author of Nazi International, The Nazis' Post-War Plan to Control Finance, Conflict, Physics, and Space. And then, as it pertains to so many other topics, to the idea of controlling space and science, The Philosopher's Stone, Alchemy, and the Secret Research for Exotic Matter. That includes Nazi research on the Bell experiment, the so-called Nazi Bell experiment, and also to work with the Russians on this. It's Ancient Alchemy Meeting Modern Physics coming up next hour. You do not want to miss this show. This material is so – we could do a whole show almost really on like a chapter of one of these books. I don't know how we're going to get it all in, but perhaps we can if Joseph bears with all of the curiosity that's going to be coming with him coming up in just about an hour or so on Coast to Coast. We'll do open lines in the meantime. And, oh, by the way, back to the website. Take a look at the picture of the church ghost. I believe that's a listener contribution on that. And coming back in just a second, we'll talk about the church shooting from earlier today from Merrillville, Illinois. A follow-up on two calls from open lines in the first hour of last night's show, the Antichrist thing and the giants on the beach in Israel. Yep, I said I was going to suss into it. Did get you more on that coming up in just a minute as we kick off the show with crypto news and then your calls for open lines on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Well, we will get to some open lines earlier. Every so once in a while, I'll remind you, so pardon me for the digression right now, too. If you're going to grab an open line, and all the phone numbers are on the website right now at coasttocoastam.com, and we'll give them again at the bottom of the hour. If you want to do that, just, you know, remind yourself to try to be a good self-editor and don't just grab the wheel, so to speak, when you jump in the car. Love to have you along for the ride, but be ready to get to your point. And remember that this is a show about everybody else, too, so hopefully it's your best question or your best comment up front, and don't try to get to three or four or something like that, because we just usually don't have time for that. So other than that, looking forward to hearing where you're going to take the show coming up in just a minute. I've been thinking a bit about this story all day about the pastor that was shot and killed during his Sunday sermon. If you've heard the story, deflected the first of the gunman's four rounds with a Bible, sending a confetti-like spray of paper into the air. It was a horrifying scene. Everybody thought that apparently it was a skit, so they thought that this was something to reinforce the point he was making as a pastor. The gunman just walked down the aisle of this large First Baptist church shortly after 8 a.m. and briefly spoke with the Reverend Fred Winters, then pulled out a .45 caliber semi-automatic pistol and began firing until the pistol jammed, and that's when churchgoers were able to jump on the guy. He was waving a knife. He caught two, but they got him. And so the situation was diffused. I still haven't heard more about it, exactly what the cause was, or even I think what the guy's name was as of last report. And I keep thinking about that story, I think, because today, too, I was preaching this morning in a pulpit. And I've had people walk into services, not this morning, but I've had that happen, where somebody's walked in, and it's kind of suspicious and sort of distracting. A priest friend of mine, Spencer, had once a thief on the run with a gun charge into a church when he was preaching, but I think everybody was okay there. But it's, again, one of those weird times where you just feel very vulnerable. Shootings in churches are a growing problem, and there doesn't appear to be any consistency on the motive of the shooters or the choices of the victims. A person of faith, you know, might want to think that God would protect worshipers at a time like that, but we know it's just not true. In fact, It's questioned in the movie The Watchmen. I noticed that they threw in a line about God not stopping the bullets intended for the faithful or something like that. So, you know, what good is God worship? And that ties into this story, the latest scientific research that's at physorg.com into the benefits of a religious life. And it's in, and once more, I'm guessing it will still confound those who think that only the illogical and the superstitious are people of faith. This is the latest neuroscience. Quote, believing in God can help block anxiety and minimize stress, according to new University of Toronto research that shows distinct brain differences between believers and non-believers. In two studies, participants performed what's called a Stroop test, a well-known test of cognitive control, while hooked up to electrodes that measured their brain activity. Compared to non-believers in God, the religious participants showed significantly less activity in what's called the anterior cingulate cortex, a portion of the brain that helps modify behavior by signaling when attention and control are needed, usually as a result of some anxiety-producing event, like making a mistake. Maybe it accounts for why people in that church in Maryville, Illinois today didn't react at first. The stronger their religious zeal, the more they believed in God, the less that part of their brain fires in response to both their own errors and the fewer errors they actually make. So they're just sort of like errors. There becomes a wider margin of error, I guess we would say, about life. The study's lead author says, quote, we found that religious people or even people who simply believe in the existence of God show significantly less brain activity in relationship to their own errors. They're much less anxious and feel less stressed when they've made an error. It'll all come out in the wash. It'll all be all right. The findings show religious belief has a calming effect on its devotees, which makes them less likely to feel anxious about making errors or facing the unknown. So unless you think this is some sort of fluke, the conclusion that being religious means being healthier is nothing new. If you remember last year, there was this piece at livescience.com that said, there are many things you can do to increase your life expectancy. Exercise, eat well, take your medication, and go to church. A new study finds people who attend religious services weekly live longer. Statistically, regular religious attendance will add 1.8 to 3.1 years to your life. The surgeon who conducted the survey speculated that the social aspect of religion could play a role in the results, that there's something about being knit into the type of community that religious communities embody that has a way of mediating a positive health effect. That's what he told Live Science a year ago. Perhaps, the researcher said, being involved in religion can, quote, then decrease your level of stress in life or increase your ability to cope with stress. Another possibility, being in a religious community helps you make meaning out of your life. Which is what I've always said, that the meaning of life is living a life full of meaning. People living meaningful lives are usually too busy to be depressed. This has always been a conclusion about people of faith that goes back a few years. In fact, back to 2005, ABC News had a study that said, is there a secret weapon against depression? Research suggests it might be religion. Studies showed that people who practice some sort of religion, and it was a wide spectrum, are happier and less stressed than those who don't. Those findings come as no surprise to Dr. Harold Koenig, a psychologist and co-director of the Center for Spirituality, Theology, and Health at Duke University, who I can't believe lost today to UNC. I mean, congratulations to the Tar Heels, but I thought Duke was had it going, and then suddenly, boy, the gas ran out, didn't it? Anyway, who says there are a number of factors to contribute to religious people being happier? Quote, generally, religious people have a positive view of the world, says Koenig. They believe that they are here for a reason. They see a purpose and a meaning to their life, and they have hope. That was the story from 2005 saying it helps fight depression. Now, of course, having a sense of purpose doesn't make people of faith bulletproof, obviously, from today, or put a force field around them that keeps out life's hassles, crises, or disappointments. It's just that having a sense of purpose gives you a horizon line to fly by. And that goes to a story that was in Science A-Go-Go a while ago. Religious people have more self-control than their religious counterparts, leading to lower rates of substance abuse, better school achievement, better health behaviors, less depression, and longer lives. That, according to a University of Miami professor that did this meta study, shows that that self-control is critical for success in life. Religious people have more self-control than do people who are not religious. Thus, religious people may be better at pursuing and achieving long-term goals that are important to them. So, not to make too fine a point on it, but in response to those who love to make it seem that believing in some sort of divine is akin to believing in the tooth fairy, I say, what's so illogical or superstitious about living a longer, better, healthier, happier life? I mean, especially when faith in God is such a broad concept. I mean, it doesn't have to be any one particular thing to get that health benefit, right? As witnessed by the graphic novel and movie Watchmen, where the character of Dr. Manhattan is the embodiment of the intersection between science and religion. A cool story on that at Newsarama. You can link up to it at coasttocoastam.com. Among all the characters populating the Watchmen film, the glowing blue figure of Dr. Manhattan stands out as a godlike being that is seemingly beyond comprehension. Yet when filmmakers approached the character, it was essential to comprehend as much as possible about Dr. Manhattan and his strange powers, so they enlisted the help of James Kakolios, a physics professor at the University of Minnesota who wrote the book The Physics of Superheroes. The professor explains, most of Dr. Manhattan's powers, though not all, have some quantum mechanical aspect to them. And just like Dr. Manhattan, most quantum physicists have really hot girlfriends and walk around without pants on. Well, he didn't actually say that last part, but I imagine he wished he could. By the way, so update last night before we get to open lines. Two calls that came in last night. One was somebody saying, had I heard an update on this Maitreya character, the people that some people claim is the Antichrist? There was an interesting article that he had, was actually an ad about that. Nope, checked around. Nothing I could find that was new. Most stuff I saw was dated at least 6 or 7 months ago, and I was just going by the internet. So anything you find out there would be what I could find. And then, by the way, too, somebody else said that they were calling in praise of the Israeli government, that the government of Israel was demonstrating a greater openness on the subject of the return of giants, and that the Nephilim had been spotted on a beach in Israel, and that the government, as proposed by the caller last night, was much more willing to talk about it than, say, other governments or the American news media. I asked them for a primary source. They didn't have one. So, all I could do was sort of search around the internet, and all I could find actually was a recent column that said the opposite, that the Israeli government is still unwilling to release details, and it's shutting down info whenever possible on this event, which happened, according to every story I found, 22 years ago. There was a story about how giants had appeared on a beach in Israel. That was 22 years ago. So the caller made it seem like there was something new about it last night. I couldn't find out anything, but I promised I would look. And that's just what we try to do when we're doing open lines, is follow up on the things we say we're going to, which leads us to open lines. And Glenn in Texas, east of the Rockies, on Coast to Coast AM to get us started. Glenn?
Mr. Punnett, how do you do?
Good. Thanks for waiting so long.
Oh, no problem. I called last month, I believe, and told you about some cryptic images I found at the end of the new X-Files movies.
Oh, I kind of remember this, right.
Yeah, and I was just wondering if you'd checked it out.
I got a couple emails about that and people confirming, so I didn't bother to go back. So once somebody, other people emailed, said, yeah, I saw that same weird thing too. Yeah, tell everybody what it is, what they should go find.
Okay. After the credits, there's a helicopter shot.
Right.
Going across a kind of a jungly terrain, and then it starts going across a bay. And there are two people in a rowboat, and the shot is several hundred feet above them. When the image gets past the rowboat, the people turn around, and it's Scully and Mulder, and they wave. And on the bottom of the bay, on either side of the rowboat, it's only about a half dozen frames. There are images of past shows and what look like Roman numerals.
All right.
It's very strange.
Right. And, you know, and not uncommon. Other people went either because of what you said or had found it independently, confirmed that there was weird stuff at the end. So we'll drive people there and the mystery drives on, unless you've solved it.
No, but I have. When I first called, I said we need to defer to some good nerds. And my brother is a professional nerd.
Right.
And so he promised me that he would check it out in high definition and see what, because it's nothing like the next X-File movie, 2014. It's more subtle than that, but there are Roman numerals that come
right
up and out of different frames.
But I think, as we talked about that time, and thank you again, Gladner, is that Chris Carter loves doing stuff like that. So no big surprise. And who can resist when you're in Hollywood and you're talking about frames? I'm reminded of the famous Betty Boop frames, which if you just search for Betty Boop in YouTube, I think YouTube has a couple of these clips from some documentaries that were done about animators, especially like the Max Fleischer animators, who used to love to stick in these really obscene little moments. So they go through it frame for frame. And if you go to YouTube and you search for those, you'll find them where, you know, there's Betty Boop nudity, which that's not new. But how nude? And exactly the kind of nude I hadn't really seen before. I mean, I'd always heard about that. And I remember the famous shot where her Hawaiian lei flips up in one of the earliest Betty Boop cartoons. But it was even some of the later ones, and the animators were still getting away with it in a frame here or a frame there. Let's go west of the Rockies. Charles is in California on Coast to Coast for Open Lines. Charles?
Yes, hi. Yeah, I have a story that I want to share with you guys. It's an abductee story, and
did it happen to you?
Yes, it happened to me. I'm from a little town in Madera called Madera Ranchos, and I lived out there most of my life. And I was having these dreams ever since I was a little kid, and all of them just seemed like dreams to me, you know, and. Well, one night I was about 15 years old, and I'm laying in my waterbed, you know, old waterbed, and it has drawers on the bottom of it that open up, and you put clothes in them, whatever. But
sure.
And I'm laying there, and my doors open a crack, and this blue light comes in my room, and it goes right up against the wall, and then as it hits the wall, it spreads across my room, and it immobilizes me, and I can't move. And I kind of go into this paralysis, and then, as soon as I couldn't hardly move, the door opens, and these two tall figures, big black eyes, the classic grays, you know, come in. But I'm able, I fall off my bed, and fall, these drawers are flimsy, the bottoms of them are flimsy, and I fall through the drawer, okay? And then, just like that, I'm awake, and it's the next morning, and I'm sitting there, and I'm kind of thinking of what happened, you know? And I look, and my drawers they're broken. I fell through them, you know?
Right.
And it was so vivid, you know, and it puzzles me. And I want to try to get, I want to try to get a regression hypnotist because.
All right, then here's here's the caveat for that. So just remember this. Do not feed any of that to the regression hypnotist.
Okay.
Because it'll be self-defeating. They'll feed it back to you.
Wow.
So if you're going to talk to a regression hypnotist, that's fine. Choose one and don't tell them anything at all about that night. Nothing. And see what they're able to uncover for you. Otherwise, you'll never be able to trust the results, but interesting. Hope we get an update sometime on that, Charles, and good luck with that. And good luck with everybody else here for the last half hour of Open Lines. If you can hang on, we'll get to you. If you haven't called, there's a couple of them. We'll give you the numbers coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. And coming up later on, we'll get to our main guest next hour, Joseph Farrell, the return of Joseph Farrell to Coast AM, the Philosopher's Stone, Alchemy, and the Secret Research for Exotic Matter. It's just amazing. And he's got this niche, you know, this research into Nazi research, I guess you could say. But more than that, just the cool things which many other mainstream scientists might not even have taken seriously. Joseph Farrell does and writes about it. We'll get it coming up, the latest on his work after the top of the hour. So between now and then, more open lines. I put the blog up. If you want to read that or if you want to share it with people, you certainly can. It's sort of my defense of faith in light of people always talking about how illogical it is. People like Bill Maher, other people always, you know, there's a purpose. And science, oddly enough, seems to back up faith all the time. So if you take a look online at coasttocoastam.com, if nothing else, just for some cool stories. And you'll find more on that. Just click onto my blog right there. And back to your open lines. We'll pick it up with the people who have been waiting the longest next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Oh, and I meant to remind you, too, if you missed last night's show on Coast to Coast and you have StreamLink, make sure you go back and catch it. We had Dr. Neil Tyson on, who's the head of the Hayden Planetarium, talking about his new book on Pluto, the Pluto Files. Just from my side of the mic, anyway, that was one of the most interesting and one of the most entertaining discussions I've ever had the privilege to be a part of. And just enjoyed him so much and the information, and he's a great teacher. And last night's show was just full of these wonderful questions, too, and we got to the caller segment later on, and highly entertaining. I just recommend it to you if you've got StreamLink, and if you don't, get it and start there. But first, let's go to the first-time caller line. Wayne is in Brentwood, California, hanging on for Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Wayne.
Good evening, Ian. How you doing?
All right. Where are you going to take us?
Well, last night the show was great, and in between there, you were plugging the Ancient Aliens documentary tonight on History Channel, and I did watch it, and it was fantastic, very entertaining. And where I'm going to take you is this: I've been fortunate enough in my life to travel to a lot of sites around the world, from Southeast Asia to Egypt to Greece to Italy. And one thing in the documentary that I noticed that I'll leave it up to you. The architecture and the ruins in Egypt, Greece, and Rome had a similarity in respect of this. If you put two big gigantic stones together side by side and you want to lock them together without mortar, the people during that period of time used to make a piece of metal, let's say an anchor, in the shape of an H, and then carve it overlapping the stones, drop it in, and it would keep the stones together. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Part of the documentary this evening, they showed Bolivia, and I never knew to this day until tonight that Bolivia had these types of ruins. The narrator said that they were dated going far back as 17,000 years, and they were showing how intricately these stones were carved and chiseled, and that it would take far more than it would take modern machinery to do what these individuals had done. And I noticed as the camera was panning the site, there were two stones lying side by side, but they were separated. But here I see this indentation overlapping the two stones as if they were like they were pulled apart. But if you pushed them together, here was this carved indentation for that metal anchor. And here's what I find fascinating. Roman days, Greeks, Egyptians, they were all neighbors. Roughly within a couple of thousand years span of their empires and so on. But here on the other side of the earth, South America, Bolivia, far older, it goes back 17,000 years, and using the same technique.
Yep. Pretty fascinating, isn't it? I mean,
It's like when they brought up the Egyptians creating a battery and the light bulb and so on, and now that's, you know, who cares today? It's so commonplace. But to see something like that architecturally in design, 15,000 years apart and halfway around the world apart, there's got to be a tie there somewhere.
I'm with you 100%. Good observation. Good one to catch. Always fascinated with the same thing myself, and I know that some people explain that away by just saying, well, it's simple geometry, the simple engineering, and that given enough time, given enough civilizations, other people will come across the same simple concept. Maybe it's as simple as that, but I don't know. Yeah, I'm with you. It always seems spooky-ooky to me, and it always seems like, come on, there had to have been some way that information was being ferried back and forth. Somebody was sharing it or there was a common source to it. But we'll leave that for now, and I think we'll get a future guest on that coming up on Coast to Coast. Reminds me of the Kensington Rune Stones, too, here in Minnesota, which I'll put aside for the moment and also hope that we can get as a future guest sometime. And if you go to the website tonight, too, there's an interesting updated confession when it comes to Roswell you might want to take a look at in the news section at coasttocoastam.com. Ed is in Philly on Coast to Coast. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Ian. Good morning.
Morning.
As a fellow human being who has a lot of faith in God, I'll bid you a good morning.
Oh, good. And you too. Thank you, too.
I had an observation tonight watching the local news here in Philadelphia, and I watched 60 Minutes.
Yeah, it was fascinating.
They both did topics, the insolvency of banks and how the FDIC would take over in this now infamous crisis we're in.
Right.
And I remembered listening to shows on Coast to Coast where you guys discussed the insolvency, potential insolvency of the FDIC, and I couldn't help but thinking, is this like a collective, put on purpose for like a programming for us to believe that the FDIC is going to be good and we shouldn't ask questions? And
well, I don't know about not asking questions, but I noticed the same thing. In fact, this morning or tomorrow morning on the CBS morning show or one of the morning shows, the same woman who was on 60 Minutes from the FDIC is going to be on talking live.
Yes, I saw that also.
Right. There's without a doubt, there's a PR campaign going on by the FDIC because they probably see a lot more dominoes going to fall. And they figure they're going to, if they can, proactively go out there and promote that everything's OK, then they'll have fewer, long line situations outside of banks.
I saw it differently. I saw it as like a programming that they want the bank runs to start. And I had these visions of, oh my God, is it going to be like a Black Monday, where everybody goes running around trying to take out their money? And this has been your other guest. Well, I don't know if you had him on, but George Nouri had him on, Gerald Celente, a few times. I know that he hasn't been on lately. He warned of bank runs in February.
Well, I think
go ahead.
Gerald was just on, I think. I got a notice about it in my email, but I didn't check the date. So you might want to go back over that for Streamlink. I don't know. Interesting. Time will tell whether you're right on that. I thought what they were doing was prophylactic, but What you're saying is true. They're going out there to try to create bank runs. I'm not sure that would be the way I would do it to reassure people that everything's okay. It might want to have a story that created more doubt than those stories created. But, okay, well, let's wait and see. Hugh, Wildcard Line on Coast to Coast AM. Hugh?
Hey, Ian. How are you doing?
I'm terrific. Thank you. I hope you are, too.
I am good. I just had a quick comment about something you said earlier about how we would all like to think that God would stop somebody from walking into a church and just killing innocent people, especially a preacher.
It's in the movie Watchmen, and yeah, there's some people who say, why shouldn't God's right. people be protected at a time like that?
Definitely. Well, you know, I was just thinking, I go to the gun range actually quite frequently, and I have never once had a gun jam on me. And it kind of makes you think, you know, who knows what else could have happened in that church had that gun not jammed after he killed the preacher. Rather than it just being a murder, it could have been a massacre. You know, if children got injured or anything else, it could have been a lot worse.
Well, it was just the one pistol, and he did get off four shots. But, yeah, I don't know how fast one has to fire over and over and over again to create a jam in whatever .45 caliber he had. But fair enough, yeah. I mean, I think there's another way to look at that, too. Yeah, when I heard that story, I thought, well, is that God sticking God's divine finger into the barrel of the gun, you know, like Bugs Bunny and Elmer or something? And then I think, well, if that's true, then couldn't God have gotten to that earlier? Or, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I think you could play with stuff like that all night long. Bottom line is the pastor is dead, and the congregation is still sorting that out, and my heart is with them at a time like that. Mark is in Ohio on Coast to Coast. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Ian. I was calling to see if you'd heard about caterpillars in the country of Liberia.
No.
Eating up a lot of their crops, poisoning a lot of their water with their waste products.
Right.
And there's a neighboring country, I don't remember the name of it, who they said the crops of cocoa and coffee could be threatened by these things. And I heard one blip about it on the radio, and I've heard no more about it.
Well, I've heard about plagues, but I didn't hear specifically about caterpillars in Liberia. But I had heard that there are, even, for example, there's a warning in this country for the so-called Mormon locust, right?
Okay.
That's on the march this year. So that could end up being a real problem. Go ahead.
Can I make an observation on the religion thing?
Sure.
Okay. After listening to you host the show, I've come to the conclusion that religion does not reduce or eliminate a corny sense of humor, and I was wondering if I could get an amen on that from you.
Yeah, well, obviously, yeah, Mark, I think well put. Yeah, amen from me. I think you probably got an old brother from others, but sure. Let's go to Ken in Victorville, California, on Coast to Coast. Ken?
Hi, how are you?
All right, terrific.
Good, glad to hear it. Hey, I got a comment and a question, or a statement
sure.
and a question. All right, I'm a Christian. When I was saved at 18, I repented and trusted in the Lord Jesus Christ. I went from hating life to enjoying it.
Yes?
Well, the best thing that ever happened to me. And I was just throwing that out there for what that was worth.
Okay.
And my question is, I've got a CD when Alex Jones was on, and they were talking about Obama and talking about the stimulus. It's excellent, excellent. But who wrote the stimulus? Do you know, or maybe one of the other callers may know who wrote the stimulus? Was it the Rockefellers? Was it the bankers? Who was it?
I don't know.
Did it come from the UN? Where did that? Who wrote the stimulus package? 1,076 pages.
Well, it depends on which one you're talking about. The most recent one. I'm getting a weird echo on your line here, Ken. So I'm going to put you on hold. The Obama administration takes total ownership of one of them. The one without any earmarks, that's the one they said they wrote top to bottom. The one that was the holdover from last fall, I believe, has many fathers, but I haven't heard anything about the UN writing that. Let me know if you get different. Max, west of the Rockies on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines. Max, where are you going to take us?
You can envision a solution to the Iranian-Israeli coming confrontation.
Okay. You want me to? I thought you were going to give us one.
Do I envision
a resolution? All I can ever imagine, honestly, are temporary resolutions. There are so many interests. So many people are invested in keeping that situation from ever ultimately becoming resolved. And I believe that those interests exist on both sides. But there are so many people whose power comes from the creation of more pain. And so they will be powerless if the situation ever becomes too peaceful. And most people who have some earthly power are reluctant to give it up, even in the name of peace. Would you agree?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Let's go, Jack, somewhere on the East Coast, open lines. We get maybe one, two more calls. Hey, Jack.
Hey, Ryan. How are you, mate?
Good. Go ahead. Where are you going to take us?
I'm from Australia, and I live over here now, but I've always been fascinated with the emphasis that this country puts on the military programs and maybe outer space programs that the U.S. endeavor here. But it's strangely enough, the U.S. has put a lot of money into secret bases in the middle of Australia. And I come from large property family that have reared beef all their life in Australia. Neighbouring properties, when I say large property, I mean 1 million acres. And it's sort of be interesting to let you know that maybe these people should start focusing on the centre of Australia and all the strange doings that the American military have got going on over there, or American government. There's a
like
lot of
what? What are the strange doings? Okay, that's what I'm asking. Like, so what do you see? What do they hear about that they report as strange doings?
I know that the incidents with mutilations on animals is quite common over there, but I'm almost sure of it, that all of their primary technology gains happen in Australia, and then they bring them over here because there's so little attention on Australia. So little attention in that area that it's quite phenomenal, the stuff that's seen over there. And look, I've seen things, but
that's fair enough.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, there are these quid pro quo arrangements that we know exist already between the United States, Australia, New Zealand, England, that wouldn't surprise me if there were an experimental base there that was done as part of, some prior arrangement. I just hadn't heard anything being reported like that. So that's very interesting. And I'll keep an eye on that and see whether or not maybe we get some guest from Australia coming up on some of that stuff that's happening in the skies and around the middle of the country in the outback. Hey, Milton, you get the last thought on this, but we've got literally about 60 seconds.
Okay, I'll be just quick. I'm calling regarding a sighting I had, actually two sightings. I live in the lower Hudson Valley region in New York.
Sure, and, beautiful area.
Oh, yes, it's very nice. And it was actually to support the black helicopter theory. I'm sure you're aware of it. I saw a helicopter that was in the air. It had a white and a blue light that was hovering around I live near Mount Vernon, so it's like in the Mount Vernon Yonkers region.
Right.
And it was hovering around for like about 45 minutes straight. It didn't stop, and there's a light that was like shining down above, just like scanning the area. And to me, it seemed a little bizarre because why would it hover for that length of period of time?
I wish I could give you an answer off the top of my head. So at least for now, it will remain a mystery, as will the pursuit for exotic matter, at least for the time being. And then we'll tell you more about it coming up. The Philosopher's Stone. Let's not waste any more time. Let's get Joseph Farrell. I don't mean waste like you all are waste of time, but I can't wait. Joseph Farrell coming up next. Coast to Coast, this is Ian Bonnet.